We knew we had a great producer, Carlo, before this morning, but our man Arad Osvandi somehow identified that Toronto FC would make major news at around 9:03. So he booked our next guest, Josh Cloak from The Athletic, who covers TFC, covers MLS, and covers the Toronto Maple Leafs. Did you know that our man Arad was on to something when you agreed to come on yesterday, Josh?
I will neither confirm nor deny.
That's a segment on Overdrive, not First Up, okay?
Yeah, this is definitely definitely the least surprising news you'll hear today. Bob Bradley named head coach. I suppose if we're looking for surprises, the fact that he was also named sporting director, which is, you know, a fancy way of calling him general manager. That perhaps is a little bit surprising, maybe just to me. I'm of the belief that, you know, the head coach, sporting director is probably, you know, something that should be shared by two people. But I do think if there's anyone that can do it with this team that has the chops and the experience to do it, it is Bob Bradley. But very much inevitable. And I think the timing just really lined up in our favor this morning.
Yes, indeed. So you don't think that they're going to hire any replacement for Ali Curtis? It'll be Bradley for both coach and GM, essentially?
So I think what they've learned from the kind of Ali Curtis experience is that you really need to have total alignment from top to bottom in terms of the vision of this club, right? Like if you look at the last two or three years with Toronto FC, you had Greg Vanney, who was, you know, one of the best coaches in MLS, probably one of the best coaches in MLS history, a Toronto FC legend. And he liked to play kind of a slow possession-based style of soccer. And, you know, those were the type of players that he wanted. And those are the type of players that before Ali Curtis, Tim Bezpachenko brings in. Ali Curtis comes in, and I don't know exactly where Bill Manning stands on this, something that, you know, I plan on asking him today in his press availability. But, you know, you now have this team that probably isn't suited to the style of play that Ali Curtis wanted. He brings in a coach, Chris Armas, who, you know, also tried to, you know, play a style of play, a more aggressive style of play that I don't think he had the players to do so. So I think what they've learned is that, look, why don't we just bring in someone, you know, who can find the type of players that he wants for his style of play. And then there's really kind of no diversion, I guess. There's the opportunity here to be a lot more cohesive, you know, in the type of players you bring in and making sure that those type of players can suit what the coach wants. I guess my only concern is that that's a lot, right? That's just literally from just an admin point of view, a lot to do, but they have the off season. It's going to be a huge, huge rebuild, right? I think this is going to be, you know, one of the biggest rebuilds in the last 10 years in Toronto sports. Because this is a team that, you know, from top to bottom, I think has really aged itself out. And it'll be interesting to see what happens with Michael Bradley, Bob's son, a player who, you know, is undoubtedly a club legend, probably the most important player in club history, but has admittedly lost a step. You know, just you watch him playing, is Bob Bradley, you know, gonna put his son in the starting 11 every game? You know, because if you watched Michael Bradley, still a really, really brilliant soccer mind and someone who can make a difference. But at his age, I don't know if playing him every single game is the best option. So still lots of questions to be answered with Bob Bradley moving forward.
Well, Michael Bradley just had his whole situation fall into his lap because he basically said, hire my dad. He won't bench me. I'll play the way I want to play.
But
hey, you talked about the changes TFC is making, and I think you're right. I think the potential of this group that has been assembled has been maxed out. So now it's time to move on, and we're seeing, you know, the changes already starting. Altidore is no longer going to be with the group, or the future of Michael Bradley. But there's two big names that have surfaced and have been connected to TFC over the coming months, and that is the return of Giovinco, and now just recently, maybe the potential arrival of Lorenzo Insigne, two very popular Italian players. What can you tell us about those rumors? Is there any truth behind them? And what do you think the next step would be to fill those designated player spots?
There's definitely some truth to both of those. My understanding is that, you know, Bill Manning did go to Italy to meet with Insigne's representatives, and there was contract terms discussed. And, you know, it would be pretty incredible to bring a player of his quality over. He would, I think, very easily become the best player in MLS. And I think if you're looking at Insigne, you know, you have to find a player. If you're going to fill that designated player slot, you have to find a player that can both contribute on the field but can also bring fans back. I think, you know, you guys probably both watched a few of those games late in the season. The attendance numbers were paltry, and I think that's really, really concerning for a club that wants to be considered among the upper echelon in MLS. And I know, you know, I've been told that ownership is really concerned about getting fans back in the seats. So you have to bring a player back that's really going to excite the fan base. And Insigne would do that. I don't know.
I don't know
if that one is going to come to fruition. I think that my understanding is they put a lot of money on the table, but I do wonder if Insigne kind of says, I don't know if I'm ready for MLS yet. So I know there was a lot of smoke to that one, but I don't know. I kind of hedge my bets on that one. Javinko's another one. My understanding is Javinko wanted, you know, something kind of close to designated player money. But I do think kind of cooler heads prevailed, I guess is the term I want to use here. And, you know, you consider that Sebastian Javinko, you know, is really aging. And yeah, it would bring fans back on one hand. But on the field, you know, is he still capable of making the kind of difference that they would need him to? Is he the right player they need, right? They need a number nine. They need a center forward who can put the ball in the back of the net and can do so really quickly. Because that's something I think we should add too. This isn't going to be a slow rebuild. Toronto FC are going to expect to make the playoffs next year, yeah. Right? They're going to have to. Sebastian Javinko, yeah, club legend, would bring fans back. I don't know if he's still capable of making the difference that they need him to. Like, if you could get him on a regular, you know, salary deal, sure. But, you know, if we're talking TAM money, designated player money, I don't think it's worth it. And so I don't know if that one was probably closer along than Insigne, but I still don't know if that one's going to happen. Neither are that close to the finish line, I guess is what I'm saying. But that doesn't mean they're not going to go out and find one. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if there's two open designated player slots. I don't know if Jefferson Soteldo has worked out as well as everyone, you know, would have hoped. And I think if you're Bob Bradley, you want to kind of design the roster in the way that you see fit. And I don't know if Jefferson Soteldo, you know, I don't know where he fits. And it's a question kind of to be answered today.
Joshua Cloak from The Athletic is our guest. He covers Toronto FC and the Toronto Maple Leafs, which we'll get to in just a moment, Josh. But when you're talking about Insigne, and I struggle with pronunciations, I want to work with enough Italians, you know.
Lorenzo Insigne.
Yeah, Insigne. All right, there you go. So what type of money would we be talking about? Like, is this something that would be unprecedented in MLS history with regards to his potential salary being offered by TFC?
Yeah, I think that's probably the right word. I mean, I've heard some numbers thrown around, and I haven't really been able to lock those numbers down because, you know, it should be noted, his agent is on record as saying that the rumors about him going to MLS are completely false, which I suppose is something he kind of has to say. But the numbers I've heard would make him the highest paid player in MLS history.
Wow.
More than David Beckham?
Well, yeah, and probably justified because he's a player that could make a real immediate impact, and he's a
wow.
player that again could bring in
Forza.
Well, I mean, Carlo, like, would you not be first in line to get season's tickets if Insigne is on the roster?
100%. You pair Insigne with Jovinko.
He's full of it. He is full of it.
You
he's
pair Insigne now. With Jovinko. Wow. Sign
I don't
me up,
think
buddy.
Yeah, and I think this is an ownership group, and I think this is a management group that understands, again, this is something I don't think we can state enough. What do we have to do to get fans back? Right?
I don't know what that was.
It's breaking news. We're breaking news.
Yeah, this is breaking news. I don't know. That's great.
Yeah, they have to get fans back in the seats, and I think if you bring in a player you consider, you know, the Italian community in Toronto. It's probably, it makes a lot of sense, but I still don't know if how close that one, you know, is to happening. And I think they're going to swing. I can say that they're going to swing big, but Insigne might be too big of a swing this time around.
Well, Josh, I wonder if that breaking news thing that our technical producer Christy Avero played had to do with what's happening Friday night on our radio station, because it's my understanding that you'll be paired with the legend Jim Taddy on our Toronto Maple Leafs broadcasts. How you feeling about Friday night with Mr. Yes Guy?
Look, I'll be honest. I am thrilled. I grew up with the Tap Man. I did. I grew up with the Tap Man. I can't wait. My old man is going to lose his mind because he's a big yes guy, no guy. He's got, I think he grew his mustache in homage to Tap Man. So,
oh, wow.
I'll be honest. I'm pretty fired up. So if that's breaking news now, I don't know. Maybe we need some more breaking news around here very excited.
Big news for us. We're excited for you, and we're excited to hear you guys on the broadcast on Friday. But let's look ahead to tonight. It's the Leafs and the Kings, and we know how well Toronto's been playing of late, winning 11 of their past 13 games. They're now within 2 points of first place in the Atlantic behind Florida. But we've been talking that throughout the morning, Josh, how at least I feel there's still a lot of upside with this team going forward, considering that they're just 26th in the NHL in goals per game. Like, I truly believe a guy like Austin Matthews, who hasn't scored a 5-on-5 goal in 10 games, is due to just get piping hot at any moment in time. And maybe that is unfounded, but I mean, just generally speaking, based on years past, we've seen it time and time again. Do you view the Leafs in a similar light, that there could be a lot of upside in the final three quarters of the season, at least from the offensive side?
Yeah, it's funny. Like, if you look at the way they've played over these last 13 games, I think it's safe to call this the best they've looked under Sheldon Keefe. I mean, the only maybe comparable is that three-game stretch against the Edmonton Oilers last season in the Canadian division, where they just really stomped them, and they would look like this offensive juggernaut. They haven't looked, like you said, like that offensive juggernaut. And I know it's not as sexy, but the way that they're kind of controlling play in the neutral zone and shutting things down defensively, that speaks to some genuine growth in the team. And that's kind of the style of play that you want to employ come playoff time, which I know everybody is just kind of waiting for around here. And I think you're right. There's still another gear for this team to hit when you consider that Austin Matthews hasn't been scoring at the rate he did last year. Peter Mrazek has barely played this season, and I think, you know, if he can kind of get back, get healthy, and play to his capabilities, the Leafs are going to have a much better kind of 1-2 punch and goal, although Joseph Woll does deserve credit for a shutout in his second NHL game. I think the top pair, you know, with TJ Brody has come around. I still don't think Jake Muzzin and Justin Hall have played their best hockey yet. They haven't looked nearly as good as they did last season. You know, and I think, again, you know, maybe I know this is a big ask. Maybe Nick Ritchie finally starts scoring. And there's still, again, there's still these players that have really yet to hit that next gear. And I think if they do, you know, their chances come playoff time look a lot better. But I do think that that's kind of, you know, that's signs of promise for Sheldon Keefe, that they've been playing this well, but they still haven't gotten some contributions from players that were really key last season. So, like I said, I think this is probably the best hockey they've played under Sheldon Keefe. And once Austin Matthews gets rolling, I think it's going to be a completely different team too.
Yeah, let's hope. I mean, it's been fun to watch. Just quickly before we let you go, Josh, to pivot back to soccer, there's been a lot of excitement in Canada over the last couple of weeks with the play and the position right now of Team Canada in their World Cup qualifying. Do you have any news on the location of their potential next game in January where they host the U.S.? And how exciting is it to watch Davies and Jonathan David continue their success away from the national team in their Champions League performances?
Well, yeah, that like just on Davies and David, watching them, Davies named man of the match in his Champions League game yesterday. Jonathan David scores the only goal in Lille's win. They need, John Herdman needs those two players to be at their best for them to qualify. And I think, you know, their confidence is only going to grow with continued results, you know, in the Champions League. And I think what's important too is those two players, when they're performing at their best, they can kind of raise the level of everyone around them, right? They've obviously, we see what they do on the field, but the way that they kind of conduct themselves off the field with the rest of this Canadian team, they raise the kind of standards and training. It's really important. But in terms of the game, my understanding is it's down to Toronto and Hamilton in late January, which should be something. With Montreal as an outlier, but I do think it's between Toronto and Hamilton. I think Hamilton makes sense in that it's turf, so you don't really have to worry about the quality of the pitch. 23,000 fans, so you'd have no problem selling it out. But I think the players and the coaching staff want BMO Field because this is a field they know, right? This is where they've played the majority of their games so far. You know, they don't have to kind of reach on this one. If they have all the comforts of home. And I think John Herdman made a really good point, you know, and after the Mexico game, when he was kind of being asked about where this game would be played, he said, we're not after a cross-country tour here. You know, we're in this to win games. And unfortunately, that means, you know, maybe Vancouver doesn't get a game, even though they could probably sell it out and put together a great event. You know, they have the game beforehand in Honduras 2 days before, and then they have a game in El Salvador 2 or 3 days after. So they want to stay on the Eastern time zone. They don't want their players, the team doesn't want their players crossing time zones, you know, the damage that does to your bodies and your sleep cycles. So I think it's down to Toronto and Hamilton, and I wouldn't be surprised if we're having another memorable, frigid night at BMO Field come January.
He is Joshua Cloak from The Athletic. I'm sure you'll have content coming out about Bob Bradley being named Toronto FC's new head coach and sporting director. And I'm certain on Friday night, you and Jim Taddy will be dominant forces on our Leafs broadcast here on TSN 1050. Thank you very much. Best of luck on Friday. We'll be listening, and we appreciate the time this morning, Josh.
Oh, can't wait. Thanks, guys.
All right, Joshua Cloak from The Athletic. Yeah, it's cool stuff, man. Very cool stuff. Working with the Tap Man. I mean, he's going to be a busy man covering the Toronto FC news, and there'll be a lot of questions that will come from the assorted media. I guess, I don't know if they'll do live press conferences back. Like, could Bill Manning and Bob Bradley be in person down at wherever yet? Arod nodding his head, so that's good news. Yeah. And, yeah, that should be some interesting stuff because a lot of big questions surrounding this club after just a dreadful season. And this is a team that prides itself on success. There's been so much of it in the past 5 years or so, and you hope that they're able to get back to a place of prominence in MLS sooner rather than later. And I think when you're talking about some of the big Italian names being Ruben, and I know the Azzurri would be very, very excited about those additions if they should come to fruition.
Hell yeah, they would.
Hell yeah. Yeah. No, exactly. Well, you gotta appeal to a certain your fan base. I mean, yeah, I think the Italian community would embrace Toronto FC like never before, and we'll see how that plays out. We'll stay tuned for the press conference when it occurs a little bit later this afternoon. Coming up on the other side, Brevin Knight, longtime NBAer. I am a big fan of Brevin Knight's game from back in the day. He is now the color commentator for the Memphis Grizzlies and the Toronto Raptors in Memphis tonight to take on the Grizz. So we'll chat with Brevin Knight coming up next on First Up. When I was walking in Memphis, I was walking with my feet 10 feet off a beam. It's the Raps and the Memphis Grizzlies tonight, and no one else is privy to our Zoom call right now, but we're all dancing and moving. One of the great songs, Walking in Memphis, and we head to Memphis now to be joined by Brevin Knight, longtime NBAer, Memphis Grizzlies color analyst. Good morning, Brevin. How often, whenever you do radio interviews in outside markets, do people play Walking in Memphis for you?
I would have to say that was my first walk-up song of a radio interview.
All right.
So I will take that and run with it, and maybe have to adopt it on other interviews.
Oh, absolutely! Walking in Memphis, an all-time classic. And Brevin, just to be perfectly transparent, huge fan of yours. I was thinking back because I was talking to one of my friends about, you know, having you on the show, and a huge basketball fan
And it came to mind that back in the day, I had you on my fantasy basketball team in grade 10 when you were a member of the expansion Charlotte Bobcats. You had a huge year, Emeka Okafor, Gerald Wallace. You guys were an excellent. Well, I mean, the performance on the court, I mean, you're an expansion team. It's come to be expected, I suppose. But you had a great season that year, and it's fantastic to have you as part of our show. And I guess to kind of parallel your experiences playing on an expansion team, and the Toronto Raptors, far from that, but a lot of young players, and think about guys like Scottie Barnes coming into the NBA and being thrust into a prominent role. When you reflect back on your own experiences, kind of as an elder statesman of sorts on young teams, and you see the progression of a guy like Scottie Barnes early on in the season, how do you look at what you've seen from him so far and evaluate that?
I think the good thing that you take from that is that he's a young player that's getting an opportunity to gain experience while playing. A lot of times, young players don't get the opportunity. A lot of it is practice, watch what the veteran guys are doing, learn from them. But for him, he's getting a chance to play, and then he's also doing it in a situation with an organization, a team that is accustomed to winning. And so that's another thing. Sometimes young guys get into a situation where you become accustomed to losing, and you start to gain losing habits. But I think with Scottie and being with Toronto, it's a positive that he's playing, but also playing for an organization that knows what it takes to win, an organization that has done a fantastic job of grooming their talent.
Brevin Knight is our guest, longtime NBA and analyst with the Memphis Grizzlies, who the Raptors play tonight, a game you can hear right here on TSN 1050 at 8 o'clock. And the superstar for Memphis is clearly Ja Morant, who's the favorite to win NBA's Most Improved Player Award, in spite of having an excellent year last year. I mean, he has just been an emerging superstar. Highlight reel play after highlight reel play. What can we expect to see from Ja Morant tonight, Brevin?
Well, I know the highlight plays are what get the most praise, because they're nice little tidbits that you can run. But the thing to his game is there's so much more depth to it. And we always talk about there's a new type of point guard in today's game, whereas before, you kind of had guys that just ran a team, such as myself, and you had guys that scored. And then, what he does is he's the combination of it all, in that he runs the team, high basketball IQ, knows how to get guys the ball at the right time, sets guys up because he draws double teams, and then is a vocal leader on this team. And so to have a guy that can bring the level of excitement that he brings, but also the basketball IQ that it needs, that needs for a point guard to get the most out of his guys. You'll see that he's going to play downhill. We love to play in the open floor. He's one of the best at it. I tell people, you're going to see a guy that's able to change directions but never go side to side. And I think that's what gives him an advantage with his speed and quickness.
Brevin, the Memphis Grizzlies have been an exciting team built around Ja Morant. And last year probably didn't take the anticipated leap that most people had thought they would, considering how good they looked the year before. But in this offseason, you guys made a pretty impactful move. You traded former Toronto Raptor Jonas Valanciunas to acquire Steven Adams. How has that move sort of panned out so far for this Memphis Grizzlies team? Has it worked out in the favor that most have hoped, and in the impact that you hope to see and the direction you hope to see this Memphis Grizzlies team take?
Well, first off, we appreciate everything that JV did. You guys got an opportunity to see it up close and personal, and he just continued to grow within his game, and we got a chance to see him really add the three-point shot while he was here. So it was fantastic. And the transition was one that was going to be tough to Steven Adams, but I thought it was a good transition, because we found that he's a pretty good facilitator from the top of the key in terms of initiating offense, which is something that we need. But he continued with the offensive rebounding that JV gave us, good screen setter, nice on the back line of defense to have a physical presence. He brings that. So a lot of the things that we got from JV in terms of all of the other things. Now, not as good of a score as JV is, but in terms of what this Grizzlies team needs, I think he has worked out tremendously well, and it's just it has allowed them to be as versatile as they were in the past in terms of can have a physical presence on the floor with a big. It's what they were used to with Mark Gasol, then moved to Valanciunas, and now with Steven Adams, but can also still play small with Jaren at the five, and then using Brandon Clark at the four. And so it's been a nice transition to have a guy that's very similar to Valanciunas, and so we didn't have to alter a lot with him coming in.
Brevin Knight is our guest, a longtime NBAer. And the big story around the NBA, at least for us, I mean, the Raptors have been off for a couple of nights, Brevin. We've been talking about a lot about LeBron and Isaiah Stewart and that altercation, the fist that LeBron hit Isaiah Stewart with. And Isaiah was not impressed by LeBron's actions, to say the least. In over the course of your 12-year NBA career, have you ever been involved in any type of altercation, bench-clearing brawl, any fun story you could share, maybe not so fun, but any stories you could share with us about your time in the NBA, about some fights that may have gone down on the court?
Well, luckily for me, I never had any of those. We had your normal pushing and shoving and guys saying, but nothing to that extent. And you know, there's your basketball players in a sense, but then there's also you're still men in a sense. And there's those times where you feel as though that is being challenged, then you're going to have your reactions. And I think Isaiah Stewart reacted in terms of, hey, listen, I feel as though you took a shot at me. Mm-hmm. Now, did it go too far? That's for everyone to debate on their own. But, I never was involved in one of those. And if I was, it wasn't that good because I don't remember it.
That's fair. Brevin, I'm being told that you are a big New York Giants fan. Can you confirm this?
Oh, man. Unfortunately, I have to. I do live and die with my New York Giants. I'm a New Jersey kid.
Okay.
And so I've grown up a New York Giants fan, and I've taken my licks here for the last 10 years.
Well, wow. I mean, Memphis is football country. I mean, it's a huge, the state of Tennessee, I mean, huge into the NFL, I mean, college football, needless to say. So you're just holding out hopes for Big Blue coming through at some point in time. I mean, 2012 wasn't that long ago, right?
Well, no, it was that long ago. When you're as old as I am, you remember these years start to go by, you start counting them a lot more. I will always love the New York Giants, but I root for the Tennessee Titans being here in Memphis, and I have to fight against so many Cowboy fans. You couldn't imagine. Memphis is big with Dallas Cowboy fans and with Pittsburgh Steelers fans.
Hmm. Interesting.
Why so many Steelers fans there?
I think because for so long there was really no team in this area, and so people just had to pick a team. And once your parents, once they picked it, then now it just gets passed down through generations, I believe, at that point.
All right, well, that's interesting. And the same applies here in Toronto. I mean, we obviously there's no NFL team here, and we have such a wide divergence of people
Bills
being fans.
A
lot of Bills fans, a lot of Cleveland Browns fans here, Cowboys, Packers. I mean, it seems like everyone's a fan of a different
What's
team.
What's it
here
with
in
the
Toronto.
Show today? This is like was this our third guest that's a Giants fan today?
Yeah, a lot of Giants fans on the show.
Crazy.
I don't know what's odd.
Hey, listen, Big Blue was big. The thing is, we just haven't had a lot to cheer about, but we're out there. I feel like my buddy's a Knicks fan, and the Knicks are finally coming around. He's a Mets fan, and so the Mets are still struggling. I feel like my Giants have just fallen right into place with New York football teams right now.
All right. Well, best of luck to the Giants the rest of the way. Maybe you guys can find a quarterback, an offensive coordinator at some point in time. But in any case,
offensive line.
Yeah, offense. Yeah, there's some issues. There's some issues. But it's the Raptors and the Grizzlies tonight. You'll be on the call. And we have the game here on TSN 1050 as well. So best of luck with the call tonight, and look forward to catching up with you again down the road, Brevin. Thank you for this.
No, thanks for having me. You guys have a good one. Happy Thanksgiving. Right. Oh, well, you guys already did yours, though, I think.
Yeah, we already did. There's different Thanksgivings.
That's
we
right.
had our Thanksgiving. But don't worry, we'll be celebrating your Thanksgiving as well. We're looking for the double holiday.
There you go. Have a good one.
All right, you too. That's Brevin Knight from the Memphis Grizzlies. They're color analyst and a longtime NBA. You'd think, Coco, you play 12 years in the NBA, you get in one fight at some point, no?
Yeah. I mean, a cat fight, a dog fight, whatever fight that you want to get into, there has to be something.
Some kind of
that
skirmish.
You find some altercation, some skirmish, some melee, whatever it is. And especially in the era that he played in, I mean, where he's not too far removed from the game, and it was still somewhat of a big man's game back then, but I don't know. I guess not.
What was the biggest, you ever have a line brawl at some point in your career?
In junior. We played in Owen Sound, and we were getting killed that game. And I'm on the ice with my D partner, and we're in our own end, and our goalie makes a save, and they've got their fourth line of meatheads on the ice. And the one of their guys, poke checks our goalie after he saves it, and my D partner, the idiot that he is, punches him in the face. And next thing you know, they start going at it, and what do the other two guys in the fourth line want to do? They want to get in the mix too. So this is something I want no part of. I had no problem.
First round pick.
I had no problem. No, in juniors, I was a third round pick. Oh, okay. I had no problem defending myself. I had no problem, getting into a little bit of a skirmish if I needed to sort of stand up for myself. But I always did it when I was mad. And nowhere in this moment where a 5-on-5 brawl was about to start was I anywhere mad. If anything, I just wanted the game to end because we were in Owen Sound, which was a dump of a rink. And we were getting killed. And next thing you know, the fourth line guys on our team are starting a line brawl. And the guy who comes up to me to grab me, he's like, let's go. And I start bear hugging him. I'm like, I'm not fighting.
Thanks, buddy. No thanks.
Then the bench is clear.
Oh, boy.
The bench is clear. And luckily, the bench is clear just to sort of push and shove. There wasn't anything, more extensive than that. But there was a big group of guys, lined up around the defensive zone. Circles just watching these three pairs of guys just go at each other. And literally it was a wrestling match. And it was after that day, I'm thinking to myself, and I've watched a lot of line brawls of even now you watch guys get into when players start games and it's 5-on-5. I don't want anything to do with that.
It was the Rangers and the Capitals last year.
Yeah.
Right?
And I get the reason why guys do it, but you have to be in the right mind frame to do it. You can't just be, caught in it. Because if you're caught in it, you're going to get yourself hurt big time.
And that's the thing. You think back to enforcers like Cam Jansen, who he wasn't necessarily angry heading into a game, but it was just expected of him. I'm going to be chucking knuckles with somebody at some point in this game. And whether or not someone does something dirty or someone says something to me that I don't like, I'm still going to be fighting. And that was just the way it was back then. And I guess now it's completely different, whether you like it or not. It's probably never going back to that way. Mm-hmm. I find it hard to believe that it ever does. But, those are just different times for sure. And
Well, think about it. Think about a line brawl. Okay, think about a line brawl where if you have more than a one-on-one fight, there's only four referees on the ice. If you have anything more than four fights going on, who's going to stop it? It's like, when does one guy decide it ends? It doesn't, right? It's just, it's a crazy scene. I don't like watching it. I mean, you see all the videos of the past of the old Broad Street bullies of chasing guys around the ice and stuff like that. Those were weird times to play in contact sports, especially contact sports that had, fighting in it. So it is what it is. But hey, we move on. I think we're in a better place now.
I completely agree. The news overnight was that Steven Matz signed a deal with the St. Louis Cardinals, a four-year deal worth $44 million. And the reports trickling out what the Blue Jays had offered Matz that ultimately he rejected and went to St. Louis. So we'll break that down. And we'll tee up the Leafs and Kings and the Raptors and Grizzlies as we wrap things up here on First Up.
We're wrapping things up here on First Up. Aaron Kurolnik and Carlo Koliakoffo with you. And pretty big morning of news, Coco. I mean, Bob Bradley hired as the head coach and, I guess, de facto general manager of Toronto FC. We spoke to Joshua Cloak about that of The Athletic, and you can make sure to find the podcast for that interview. Really good stuff from Josh about Bradley. And, of course, Steven Matz overnight agreeing to terms with the St. Louis Cardinals on a four-year deal worth, I think, $48 million if all incentives and everything are hit with Matz. And the report this morning from John Morosi that the Blue Jays offered a three-year deal to Matz. Mm-hmm. So I guess they weren't willing to go to four. And ultimately, Matz said, thanks, but no thanks. I'll take the four-year deal because why wouldn't you, right?
I mean, yeah, it's $11 million, right?
Yeah, it's a no-brainer.
But an interesting tweet from the Mets GM, Steve Cohen, saying that, I'm not happy this morning. I've never seen such unprofessional behavior exhibited by a player's agent. I guess words and promises don't matter. And this was a response to Steven Matz signing with the Cardinals, because apparently the Mets were heavily in on him returning to the Mets. But if you're the Mets, why are you so upset about a guy who doesn't want to return to a situation he didn't have much success in?
Like, well, he had a lot of success in 2018 and 2019. It was just he was terrible in 2020. And
right.
So, I mean, you know, maybe they think he's got his mojo back, and who really knows what was going on behind the scenes. Maybe Steve Cohen, the owner of the Mets, and whoever the GM is up there, like they have a new GM in New York every 5 minutes. But I guess they thought they had a deal done with Matz, or it was closed, and then just fell through. So who really knows what transpires at these high level of negotiations. But Steven Matz on his way to St. Louis, and the Toronto Blue Jays losing out on yet another free agent starting pitcher. So Robbie Ray remains a free agent, but we have not heard much positivity when it comes to Robbie Ray and the likelihood of returning to Toronto. I think we all would love to see it. But will it happen? And if it does happen, what type of money and term are they going to be sending this guy?
Yeah,
it'll
no
be
kidding.
A big, big ticket. This hour, First Up, brought to you by Sokolov Lawyers. Seriously injured? Don't put it off. Call Sokolov. Visit areyouhurt.ca.
They only get paid when you do.
A huge night coming up in the sports world. It's the Raps and the Grizzlies, a game you can hear on TSN 1050. It's the Leafs and the LA Kings, a light one. No, not a light one, a late one for the boys. And we are going to be tired tomorrow morning. I guess this is a 10:30 start, so we're not getting to bed before 1 a.m. if we're
not. It's not good, eh?
So hopefully the Leafs get out to a, I don't know, 7-0 lead after two, right to bed. Feeling good about everything we've
quick
seen.
Quick start, boys. Quick start. Put it in the bag early. Point night. Let's go.
For 20 fingers, I almost called you Jeff McDonald because that is your name in our Zoom chat. For Arad Osmandi and our intern Luca, I'm Aaron Kurolnik. He's Carlo Koliakoffo. Coco, take it away.
Bang!